In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at Burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles, the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash, but the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming.
Greetings, trashlings. Welcome to a not fun episode of Space Trash.
Lifestyles of the rich and Uranus. Sarah Armour.
And I'm Molly Mulshine. And we're going to talk about Russell Brand and the rape and sexual assault allegations about him.
The only funny thing that I have come up with so far, if you say the word rape or sexual assault on YouTube, they demonetize you. So all the videos, if you watch anything on YouTube, it's like, he's being accused of S-A-R.
I don't think YouTube is a good place to get news about this.
I couldn't get the documentary unless I paid an additional $88.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's like, actually, I'm okay on this. So I watched all of the news shows coverage of it. But then sometimes YouTube will just start playing the next like thing that's titled that. But anyway, you know, the news programs do say rape. But
yeah. Well, that's why the UK TV industry is not circling the drain like the US TV industry, because they actually paywall stuff and like stick to it. Like they, same thing with British press. Like they don't give shit. They don't give shit away for free just to increase their numbers. They kind of are like, well, if we give it away for free, then we're not going to make money. So
I mean, they're not wrong. They're not wrong.
Yeah, I think they might be onto something, unfortunately.
Making money by charging people.
Yeah, it works.
Incredible stuff. Incredible yeah. stuff. Love to hear
so,
it.
So, yeah, the allegations were really gross. I watched the documentary because I am here in the United Kingdom.
I was feeling free for the last 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was hard to watch. Because anytime someone's graphically describing sexual crimes, it's extremely hard to watch, because a lot of the time it puts things into your head that wouldn't have arrived there naturally.
Like you just did to me right now, but except that you're reading what my exact thought is.
Really? Yeah. It's yeah. like, I hate it. Like even when like Oprah was doing the Lord's work in the 90s when she started talking about, you know, child sexual assault, she was like the first mainstream person to really talk about that. But like she would have people on and they'd be saying what happened to them, and you're just like, oh my god, I didn't even know I didn't even know people did that. Like, ugh, it's so stomach turning.
I have an even opposite thought that gets into my head, but same vibes, but it's, I would say that very much sandwiches in bed versus married with child. Like sometimes I watch, like when I was listening to the allegations, and oftentimes in these things, I'm like, have I been assaulted like 1,000 times? I'm like, I've been like, aww. Oh my God. I'm like, oh guys, I'm like, oh yeah, guys do that. Like,
oh
yeah. And it's like, I mean, a lot of the stuff that was coming out about Brand was absolutely assault and unacceptable, but there are some things that I just related, not just when Russell Brand story, and a lot of these things where I'm like, oh yeah, that's just like what guys do. And I've just seen the dark side.
It is sad. A lot of the women in this documentary, they're mostly portrayed by actors to anonymize them. And I do wish you saw it, because the first one had a really bad American accent, fake American accent. And I was like, come on, Channel 4. My backstage profile is right there. It's right there. It could have been real, though. You know, I go on backstage.com and type in American accent 300 times a day, like, and I never find anything. And instead, they've got these Brits doing these fake American accents. But anyway, they had a lot of the women were anonymized. Either they only showed the back of their head, or they had someone doing a voiceover to protect their identities. And so a lot of them, you know, it happened to them 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. And they are reflecting on it and saying, back then, it didn't strike me as that weird. And now that I'm older, I can see what was wrong with it. And it's really sad, because then it made me start thinking about how, like, men have behaved this way for all of time. Right. And like, one thing that protected men was victim blaming for the longest time. Like, oh, well, you, like, I think, you know, for a really long period of time, men were able to get away with doing stuff like this just by virtue of the fact that they could say, well, she shouldn't have come to my room with me. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
That was such a legit defense for such a long time. And it kept women silent for so long, because you were raised to be a good girl and never go into a guy's bedroom with him and not go home with him.
Right. Why did you think it was going to happen in a hotel? It's like, right. And it's like, anything could happen, good or bad, I guess.
Right. And if you did, all bets were off. And the really crazy thing that they show, two crazy things. The first is that they show a lot of archival footage of his performances on British television.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you have to get permission from all of the broadcasters to play these clips, which is just a testament to how much I think everybody fucking hates him, that they were like, mm-hmm. Oh, Channel 4 is doing, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, Channel 4 is doing a documentary on what a douche lord this guy is, and they want our old special.
You have it all.
The rights to? Oh, absolutely. Tell us where to sign.
Take him down.
You know what I mean? So, like, if he was an actually respected and liked figure, it would have been way harder for them to get all this archival footage. And all of the archival footage is two things. Completely damning. Like, he is explaining what he does. He has this extended joke where he talks about how he really likes giving girls blowjobs that make mascara run down their face, and he likes when they gag. And then they have a woman saying that's how he attacked her. He forced that on her, and she had to punch him in the stomach to get him off of her, and she was 16 years old. So these are the two things. The first thing is that he's giving away his crimes. He's talking about it openly on television over and over and over again, just about what a perv he is. He says things like, oh, no sexual experience should be scary unless it's with me. And then everyone laughs. And then the other thing that's true of all of the archival clips they show is none of it is fucking funny. He is not a funny person. He's not a funny guy. And it was so crazy to watch it and be like, he was really big in the UK, because my timeline, of course, having lived here for 5 years, I have a lot of British people on the old TL, and they're all like shook. They're all shook by this.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, first of all, isn't this guy, hasn't he always been like kind of a loser? And second of all, was he really that big here? And I guess he was.
Yeah, that's the thing. From an American standpoint, I don't know what your experience was. For me, it was like we were introduced to him with Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and then he married Katy Perry. And then I watched his specials, and some of them I've enjoyed. But I didn't even know he existed before Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Did you?
No. And
he was playing like a sex addict. A fucked up sex addict.
He was like, I always thought in the American, like, landscape, he was a douchebag. Like, we totally all thought he was a douchebag. Well, the thing that Hollywood did for him that he did not deserve was they made it seem like he was in on the joke of himself, which
I don't
think he ever has been, ever. I think he always has thought that he was this like awesome guy, and that he's so funny, and like, he in Get Him to the Greek, in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, like, he's a douchebag. He's a fucking douche. But, like, I don't think he understood that that was writers and directors
making fun of him to his face.
Yeah, making fun of who he is. Like,
they were just writing him. He's like, I'm perfect for this. They're like, no, we wrote this for you.
Right. You're like, Russell, you're not acting. And like, and they're helping him to kind of polish his image and seem like he's funnier than he is, because there was an element of that in his British persona. In fact, a lot of the TV clips that they show, he is, you know, borderline sexually assaulting people on camera. He's interviewing. Yes. They go through his whole career in British TV, and there's one part where he's interviewing a woman who was on Big Brother, and he pulls his pants down and sits on her lap in his underwear, and she's like trying to push him off,
and then we just broadcast, and everyone's like, what a wacky guy.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And what else? There was also a British woman went to interview him in Hollywood, and he starts kissing her at the end of the interview. He starts like kissing her and pretending to grope her, and like actually kind of probably actually groping her. And she's just laughing it off, and all the people around her laughing it off. And it's terrible. And another thing that really bothered me about this documentary is they really overstated his transition to the US. They said in 2012, Russell Brand moved to America and became a Hollywood A-lister. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa. A-lister?
A-lister. No, he married Katy Perry, whatever you want to call that. Of all the A-listers to marry, she, to me, is the least, like, objectively cool. Even if, regardless of the hits, I don't think she's like Christian Camp, like, turned, I'm dressed like a cupcake.
Well, it doesn't really matter. Like,
feel like if he was actually, like, an A-list adjacent guy, he would, like, I don't think Katy Perry, I just knew him through Katy Perry.
Yeah, but she was and is huge, Sarah. You have to understand. For middle America, she's like Madonna.
Really? Really?
Yes. Yeah. Like, the numbers,
I think she's a punchline.
The numbers don't lie. I know, but like, wow. we're cool.
We're cool. That's why weren't with Russ.
She's just, I mean, like, no shade. She does what she does and she's good at it. But like, the numbers that she puts down on her tours, her singles, especially in her prime, were like insane. Like, she was she was huge at that time.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it also seems like, I mean, when they go into like his sexual proclivities at that time, it's kind of like he must have been cheating on her. And know, right, about the famous moment in her documentary when he dumps her over text message 3 minutes before she has to go on stage, divorces her over text message.
What?
Sarah, this is like one of the most famous pop culture moments of the last, like,
of all the things S-A-R that I've heard today, I'm ready to cry. That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, dude, you got to watch the clip. This is like when I said I have never seen Law and Order SVU.
Right. No, but like, wait, no, that's too mean.
It's awful.
She was about to go on stage. She was filming her documentary and he texted her, I want a divorce.
Yes.
Oh my God. And it's all recorded. And he knew that she was also making it. It wasn't just, I'm going to fuck your show up. But now this is going to be remembered forever because I know that you're making a documentary.
He probably didn't know the documentary was going to record him doing that because that would make him look bad.
It's so fucking mean.
Yeah, he definitely probably wanted to. Yeah. Wow. And now I'm looking. I found this from Hello Magazine. One thing a lot of people are talking about, which is totally beside the point and not important, is who knew? Who knew and should have done something? It's like, no.
I was like, that was his material. His shtick was, I'm rapey.
Right. And they go through in the documentary all of the people who did try to escalate it and all the ways that nothing happened. And like, there's now sort of a witch hunt going on of people being like, well, why didn't so-and-so say anything? Why didn't this person say anything? And one of the people they're bringing up is Katy Perry. And it's like, no, don't get mad at the people who probably did.
She married him. She loved him.
And she probably did know. And that's not a reason to get mad at her. It's a reason to feel bad because she was married to a famous sex predator. And like, what the hell really do you think she can do about it?
I think that like similar, I forgive Camille too. Like, I think that men are really good when they are planning on marrying someone or when they're planning on. It's like we were talking about, I feel like every episode the last 3 weeks has been like assault, like criminals and how they hide stuff. Like, I feel
exactly.
like.
He hid it from her.
He hid it from her. Right. And then when did he go, he went to rehab for sex addiction. I don't know if that was before or after their marriage, though.
I don't know. But so in Hello Magazine, they have Katy Perry hinted she knew the real truth about ex-Russell Brand in past interview. She gave an interview to Vogue in 2013 and she said, at first when I met him, he wanted an equal. And I think a lot of times strong men do want an equal, but then they get that equal and they're like, I can't handle the equalness. She described his attitude towards her professional stature as, quote, very controlling, especially during her tours, causing a significant strain on their relationship. Although she initially shouldered the blame for their breakup, she hinted at deeper issues. I felt a lot of responsibility for it ending, but then I found out the real truth. I keep it locked in my safe for a rainy day. So here's the thing about that.
It's raining. Get out there, Katy. Now you can talk.
I know, but also she doesn't have to. And
I don't think she needs to, and I don't think she should. But if anything, if she was waiting for this moment, it now.
Yeah, and I just want to explain to people legally why you don't just, when you find out someone is a sex predator, you can't just tweet Russell Brand is a sex predator, because you will get sued. You will get sued if you don't have proof upon proof upon proof to back it up. I mean, the amount of people that they have in this documentary corroborating these stories and that all have similar, like two different women in this documentary are like, the life left from behind his eyes. He looked like a different person. Like you have to, you can't just, even if you know that something is going on, you can't make it public because then you're the one who's going to lose everything. That is why.
That's right.
There's no point in being like, this person should have said something. This person should have said something. One of the women said that she couldn't even use the word rape until like quite a while later. Like she was talking about
like
it.
And just in herself, for herself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's very common, because the thing is, he would schmooze these women. The thing that we always talk about and we always say is like, rape very rarely happens in a dark alley. It is usually someone who has gained your trust. And like, he would schmooze these women and he would tell them that he wanted to have their babies and stuff, which is funny because men can't have babies, but that was the wording that one woman used. But like, you can totally hear him saying that, like,
absolutely. And it's actually a cutie. That's a cute thing for a guy to say, because it is so backwards and stupid, but also kind of sexy.
Right. And he knows that. And that's why he did it. Uh-huh. But so I was thinking, so with the whole Katy Perry thing, like I was thinking probably a big part of the reason, because I'm watching this documentary and I'm like, this guy is not funny. He is, okay, maybe charming, maybe charismatic for TV, you know, funny, no. But like, he keeps getting these opportunities. And I'm like, how is he convincing all these people that he's good enough for all these opportunities? Why are people so down with what he's selling when he has no punchlines? Like, this is so weird. And then I was like, I think part of him, and I always wonder if with like sex predators, it's conscious or unconscious. I don't know if it was conscious or unconscious, but I think that he knew the more famous he got, the more successful he got, the easier it would be for him to get away with these assaults. And I think he knew, I think he had a drive in him that was pushing him both to take on the entertainment industry and rise through the ranks and to be a sex predator. And I think they went hand in hand. Like, I think somehow each side is working with the other side and drawing from the same evil skill set to push these things forward, because you can't have one without the other. Because if you're not this charismatic rich guy, you're going to face consequences for your crimes a lot sooner than if you are. So I think with a lot of these powerful people, it kind of takes the same skills to get people in a position where you are able to assault them that it does to get big entertainment decision makers in a position where they are giving you job after job after job, even though there's a paper trail of complaints about your behavior. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's like a super deep thought or anything, but it's just, I don't know. It just kind of clicked for me. I think that's why he married Katy Perry.
Why?
I think he married Katy Perry because he knew that she was America's sweetheart at the time and that this would give him even more cover and even more plausible deniability. Because it did seem like such a random relationship at the time. Like, I do think that was why he pursued that relationship because it legitimized him even further and made him an even bigger star, you know?
I have so many thoughts. The first thing I want to say, sort of fame, like the drive towards fame and the drive towards, I guess, sexual. See, I guess I have trouble even because one of the questions I have is I don't know if it's that he has a drive towards growing his career as a sexual assailant necessarily. That's where the question of conscious versus unconscious comes in, you know, because I do think maybe he would call it sexual prowess or sexual power or can do whatever I want. Like, I always wonder if people who are sexual predators like relate to themselves as that way, because like I think there's some that do, right? Like that, no, like Cosby's a sexual predator, that's why he was doing so much to hide it, right? Whereas someone like Russell, who's wearing his game on his sleeve, which is like literally even on television, he when you're talking about that click moment, it's like, yeah, you're actually jeopardying what you're watching. You're going, oh, I see now that the more famous he gets, the more that he can assault all of us watching this, the audience member, the woman that he's sitting on. And we're just like, oh, it's this charming bloke. And it's like, so it is.
And being so open about sex addiction, which is
right.
Let's be honest. Like, that's like predator adjacent, because when you're addicted to sex, you're addicted to, I don't know if that's fair to say, but,
well, but that's the question that we've been asking on the last Patreon and on the last, that's why the Giuliani thing was interesting to me starting from then until now, which is like addiction as
an excuse.
And like I do think addiction is an explanation for, it's not an excuse for, and but I think there are people that have sex addiction. I have two clients who actually, different people, don't know each other, but who both are men who went to rehab for sex addiction. But it wasn't because they were having sex with a lot of people. It's because they were watching so much porn.
Okay, so that to me is porn addiction.
But it falls under the same like rehab skew.
Yeah, sure. I just feel like sex addiction,
it's just like compulsive when you bring someone else into it, is no longer...
Right, like, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
How can you, like, to be a sex addict, you have to have enough people that are willing to have sex with you to act on it. So right. It's like, does anyone? I mean, I guess Tiger Woods did because he was that hot. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
that's the whole thing though, right? It's like,
that's what I don't get. When people are like, I'm a sex addict, I'm like, you can't be, because if you're a coke addict, you're going to get coke no matter what. You're going to figure it out. You're going to sell something. You're going to sell a kidney. You're going to rob your parents. You're going to figure it out. Like, if you're a sex addict and there's no holes around that are willing, like, not, that's terrible. Ew. I know. That's the most disgusting thing I've ever said.
No willing holes. I've never heard Molly relate to a woman as a whole before. And
no, I know.
Russell is just bringing us all down on his level.
I mean, anything like a glory hole, a butthole, like anything. If you're a sex addict and there's no one who's willingly offering up something, like
a hole,
then what
hole
are you
works?
Gonna, what are you going to do? Just be like, well, I guess not today. You know, like it's just.
Well, no, I think then what I would hope is. First choice would be maybe just go home and use your hand. Second choice would be you do something weird, like you masturbate on a bus or you do something high intensity sexuality. Like Louis C.K., he's not a sex addict, but he was like, hey, why don't you come in my office while I jerk off in front of you, if that's okay. Like, what do you call that? Like, I think, you know,
that was like sexual, a humiliation kink, I feel.
Definitely. But like those women felt assaulted. Those
oh,
the ones
yeah,
that
for
said
sure.
That they, do you know what I mean? So, but,
oh, it was,
but even
it
that
was assault,
is
to be clear.
It is assault. Yeah. And the nuance of, although I will say, I think if some, well, it depends. Sarah Silverman's like, yeah, he did it in front of me. And I told him to, I said, it's a hilarious thing to do. So, but I think the thing with Louis C.K. is there were people that said no, and he still did it. And a lot of these people were working for him or were younger. I mean, there's so much nuance to anything
power
that relates to power imbalances and to sexuality in general, because two people are involved, and I think a lot of times with like addiction in general, alcoholism or coke addiction, let's just say, unless you get into intervention zone, it's on you because you're hurting yourself. When you start hurting people, it actually, you said it a few episodes ago, and I think that's completely right. When it really becomes, when addiction becomes a problem, it's when you're like, when other people are affected. Didn't you say that? Wasn't it you that said that?
No, I just said that's like, the only way to get sent to rehab. Otherwise, you're just going to keep.
Oh, well, I mean, then you're right. So we're all addicted, sugar, coffee, name it, even if you think you're pure. But like,
right.
But I think that like, right, when something starts to, when a compulsive behavior or any kind of, like, who's to say that people will say, I was an alcoholic, and you say, well, how much did you drink? And they go, this much. And you go, really? Oh my God, this is, you pussy. Right. Or you like, you know, I'm just saying there's all these different sort of, we all are human individuals on this planet trying to interact with each other. And I think, right. There are fine lines. You said last episode, the age of consent in the UK is 16. Well, technically, that first victim whose story was, I think, really awful. I read about the documentary.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm talking about, maybe it's the girl that he picked up at the shopping mall.
No, well, this girl was leaving Topshop.
Okay, that was her. So she
R.I.P.
went home and told her mother, R.I.P. Topshop. She went home and told her mother that she was hit on by Russell Brand. According to what I read, her mother and her called Russell together to say, "Did you just want to make sure you know she's 16? Russell said, yeah, no problem. That's consent. Yeah, that's the age of consent. And then the mother said, I want to get it right. The mother said, I was uncomfortable with the situation. This guy's in his 30s, but my 16-year-old daughter is an independent person. And like, there was no way that I could stop her for doing whatever she was going to do. So she just let her. And it's like,
but I mean,
and then
also internalized misogyny, because I'm sure the mom got a little thrill out of it. Like, my daughter is the chosen one of this successful man. This is what we are supposed to do. Like, I don't want to judge her, because
it is the internalized misogyny, though, is the piece, like 1,000,000,000%. What was interesting about the account that I read from the Topshop girl. So they dated for months. And at one point, her mom actually, I don't remember if she was walking her to the door or picked her up at the door. And this is where I do think it is like absolutely call it whatever you want, sex addiction, compulsive. But he, you know, everybody always has to push it. Everyone always has to push it no matter what to find out what the limits are. The mother, he opened the door and he then leaned down and kissed the mother on the mouth.
Ugh.
And then the mother reported it, the mother told whatever reporter I was reading, it made her very uncomfortable.
And so, oh,
but then
like,
then that was just it. And it's like, this guy can't get off. Like, not, he's just really trying to find anything to do to make us bust him faster, harder, more. And we just didn't.
Yeah. Back to the whole question of if it's conscious or unconscious, does he know that he was being a predator in those moments?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Right.
Right. Like, the fact that he did come out and was so open for years, has been open about sex addiction, makes me think that and this doesn't change whether he's guilty or not. It doesn't exonerate him, but it makes me think he has not come to that conclusion yet. And he still doesn't think he did it. He still doesn't think he did anything wrong, because like two of the women,
I think, he does know. Keep going, but I want to. I'll make a case for he does know he did something wrong. Now he's just playing the law.
Yeah, and you know what? Two of the women talked about how
he does know.
He apologized afterward.
Yes,
and it's like, dude, you fucking apologized. You know you did something wrong. You put it on, like, one of the things on the documentary was like, our journalists were able to confirm that this was Russell Brand's phone number for something that happened in 2012. I'm like, wow. You freaking idiot. Like, I'm not a criminal. I never do anything.
Yeah, but that's right. But that's the thing. It's not idiot. He might not have actually thought this would ever come back to bite him.
Right. Like
at that time,
as Dorinda Medley said, say it, forget it, write it, regret it. If you're going to apologize for your attempted sexual assault, do it in person. Don't have a paper trail. So yeah, that does make me think that like he either didn't understand the gravity of what he had done, actually, like, thought he was being a little pushy but didn't fully understand what he had done, or he really is that full of himself, that narcissistic, that he thought there's no way this will ever there's no way this will ever come back to bite me.
Well, actually, he is famously a self-described recovering narcissist. I was listening to an interview of him on a podcast where he was talking about like coming to terms with the fact, like realizing that he was a narcissist and that was part of his like sexual addiction treatment. And, you know, obviously it all links back to his childhood and his mother. And
oh, yeah, of course, blame it on a woman. Of course.
Well, it's not blame it on a woman as much as I do think that, like, I think that that's what we always talk about. Like, there's a difference between like someone that like is just born like screwy versus mm-hmm. like people can display narcissistic behavioral tendencies that then, you know, you can actually that are treatable. I mean, the same way that we all have tendencies that are fucked up and treatable. I mean, humans are imperfect, but he talks about, you know, what I think is interesting about him is like, it really is. I mean, the hiding in plain sight is the right name for the doc, because the truth is either way, whatever he knows, whatever he has done in the past and then continues to become aware of as he heals, let's just say, I think that there must be some, I can imagine there being some safety in exposing all of it. I mean, look, I do herpes jokes. And then when I have sex, I'm like, you heard my joke. Like,
yeah, like I guess he,
does that make sense? Like, there's something about putting it out there where you go, hey, I warned you. Hey, you know who I am. So even if he's not even sure where the line is, he's like, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And he's putting it on other people to be responsible for his behavior because he told you what he was going to do. And it's like, yeah, but, and that's where comedy is so dangerous, because it's like, nobody's joking. The audience is laughing because it's so much tension, because it would be a ridiculous thing for it to be true. And yet, it is.
Yeah. A lot of people in the UK are debating the whole age of consent is 16 thing. And
oh, I'm glad. Like, that's great. That's great news.
I know. They need to raise it.
16 is too young.
It's way too young. I got in an argument about this with a friend who's Scottish when we were like 20. And I was like, 16 is too young. Those girls are too young to be having sex with adults. And she was like, I was definitely mature enough when I was 16. And I was like, what?
If someone's defensive about being totally able to be mature enough to be in a consensual relationship with an adult, they probably were.
No.
Not that they were mature enough, but they might have been in a, I feel like if you're defensive that 16, like you're saying, no, even if you're not saying I was in a, but it's not making sense. I don't know why it's so hard for me to articulate. Do you know what I'm trying to say? That like, you're there's something there probably, for them where they're like, I was.
She felt that she was special because an adult took interest in her at 16. Yes.
Right. And she might have had
my friend.
Like,
who was
that's what I'm saying. Like I had a friend that when we were seniors in high school, she was a junior, but she was dating the janitor who was like 25 or something. But he was like, you know, he was like really immature and he still lived with his parents. And it was really, it was weird to me then. It was weird to me now.
That's
but,
not okay.
Of course it's not okay. But at the time, and actually I remember thinking it wasn't okay, but less because he was 25, more because I was like, you're so much better than a janitor at her school. Like, I don't know. But we were kids. You know? Now I'd be lucky to have anybody with a job, but it's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think back to that time. I'm not even joking, but you know what I mean? It's it objectively is too young to know that you're too young. I think if you can't vote, you can't fuck adults.
Yeah, it's too young. And
you can't drink. You can't do anything. 16 is like, there are people that haven't gotten their periods at 16. I mean,
yeah. It's crazy. And I don't know when the
it's
law
just too
dates,
young.
Yeah, I don't know when the law dates back to. I doubt they will change it. Some people were arguing like, oh, the law, the 16-year-old law is so that teenagers can have sex with each other, not so that adults could have sex with teenagers. And it's like, no, I actually don't think that's why the law was written that way, because there are laws in the U.S.
Why would you need to consent to have sex
with someone the same age as you? Yeah, exactly.
So I keep going.
America, in the U.S., it changes from state to state, but there are, they call it a Romeo and Juliet clause, where if you're within 2 years of the age of consent, it doesn't count as a crime. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so I'm actually okay with that. Yeah, and I like that law. That law has always made sense to me, because like, yeah, I totally get like, so you're dating for 3 years, she's a freshman, you're a sophomore, but you know, you graduated and now you're 21 and she's, or you're 20 and she's 17. I don't know. Now I'm doing math. It's too much.
No,
but
that's
like, yeah,
too
that always has made
also.
Sense to me in terms of,
I don't like 20 and 17.
But like, I'm trying to think of like, Yeah, like but to... actually, though, that's bad math on my part. That's bad math on my part. So it actually would be 17 and 19.
Yeah, that is
which is actually okay with me.
More palatable. But yeah, it's like, I don't think
it seems
that's why.
Though, right. Actually, 17, 20 does make me feel that's weird. 17, 19 doesn't.
It's a fine line for sure.
Yeah, 2 years is about my standard of normal if teen is still in your name.
Yeah, like I remember being a freshman and knowing that some like there was it was not very common, but once in a while, like a freshman and senior would hook up and you would be like, ugh, this is weird. These freshmen are children.
Yeah, yes.
You hooked up with a freshman.
But like everyone did, yeah. No, but I would have.
No, that was so funny the way that you went quiet and you.
I mean, I did fuck that 23-year-old little boy.
That doesn't count.
Part of what's really become annoying in a way about like the comedy landscape is that everything now is like, it's like you don't need punchlines, but if you have shock value, then everyone wants to see it and everyone pushes you forward and being shocking and doing something shocking. Eric Andre, did you hear last night? He smashed the piano. It's like, what? Like, did you hear? He threw a table. It's like, oh, what? You know, like, yeah, I have a friend that kissed someone when they were on stage, someone in the front row, they gave him a kiss. You know, if you do things that are like outlandish, you get pushed ahead. And actually, to the same point, like, you know, Ariel Elias, I think you wrote something about her. She's my friend. She blew up because something outlandish happened to her on stage. And now she has a career because of it. So it's really, and she should have, and I'll say this, she should have always had a career beforehand. She's one of the absolute best writers on planet Earth right now. I stand by it. She's always been my favorite. But until she responded to a beer being thrown at her by chugging it from stage, great move R. But actually that is abusive. And it's, shock value has so much more weight these days. I feel like your little boyfriend's shoes are like the shock value version of fashion as well. But that's, you know, but it's like, just like the ability to get attention is now the only thing that seems to matter. And that's like kind of boring to me.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. And I don't know how to fix it. And you can tell when you watch these old clips of Russell Brand's comedy that he was a progenitor of this because, like, yes, shock value, it... A big part of comedy, a big part of joke writing is establishing tension and then breaking it. And a good way break the tension is through shock value. So it's not that it doesn't have a place in comedy at all. Like I have one of my favorite jokes I've ever written about Kanye West paying his surrogate only $50,000. Like that's a shock value joke because the punchline is
I love that joke. Yeah.
The punchline is that's probably the least amount Kanye's ever paid a woman to shit on a table. So like that's shock value, but it's
right, but that's using the craft of language, which is, but then right, it's like it's all comedy, right, sexuality. Where are the lines of what is like?
Yeah, because Russell Brand's shock value is him pretending that he's a woman gagging on his dick, and it's like, well, there was nothing that's not expanding on a point you've already made. It's not drawing a parallel to anything. It's not. There's literally no punchline. You're just mimicking a really disgusting sex act.
I feel like, again, though, the laughs are probably coming from the men where I'm literally just putting I have no idea if this is true, but the thought that I'm having is that there could be some unspoken, he might not have to set that up for the men to all know what he means. And they're getting sort of attention. Not that you don't need to set up, but like, I don't know. I feel like he is a lot of that's what I'm saying. When I read the article and when I hear some of his jokes, he's not like reinventing a sexual assault. Like he's just saying out loud what they're all watching on porn. Every younger guy that I've dated thinks that that's actually what giving head is. And I've had to be like, hey, you know that, like, I've literally had to sit little boy. So like, right now I didn't hook up with a freshman, but like I have hooked up with like a few younger guys who do that to me. And then I have to like stop and explain, we don't think this is hot.
Yeah. It's like, not nice.
And they've been like, what? And like, I am like, so sorry to burst your bubble, but it's actually like makes me feel violated, you know. I think I told you that story, and then what the idiot was like, look, like I love, what did he say? It was really stupid. He was like I love women, I love the movie What Women Want. I'm like,
no,
by Mel Gibson. I'm like, but like And then I'm like, are you fucking with me? Like,
no.
You watch the movie, what, like, because it's like, yeah, the whole, I mean, it's a longer, very funny story, but related to me trying to explain to someone, I think you're attempting assault in bed, and I'm going, no. I love women. What Woman Wants, one of my favorite movies. And it's like, okay, but for the record, Google the voicemails that Mel left his girlfriend. Like, Google Mel Gibson Holocaust, see what comes up. Like, it's like, of all the movies to be like, so all this to say, I do feel after that he learned the lesson, because I no longer felt like I had to. If anything, I would just pretend to cry earlier to get it over with. But no, kidding.
Oh, Sarah, that's so sad.
But no, but he got the point. He did get the point, and genuinely didn't know. I mean, I do feel like that's where it's like I feel like a lot of my work is like fielding some of this darkness and being like, okay, look, maybe you don't know. I'll be the one to tell you. You're assaulting people. Like,
yeah.
I won't take this personally, and I won't tell the cops, but you can't ever do it again. Capiche?
The Guardian did this big story today. This talk written by someone who goes to, their approach is a little weird, I have to say. They go to schools throughout the UK and lead discussions on pornography. And I'm like, well, why did you feel called to do this? It's a little weird, but whatever. They're talking.
How interesting, though. Wow.
Yeah, huh. They're talking about how these kids are saying, like, they're watching, they're exposed to porn before they are even close to getting any form of sex ed. And the one kid said something that is going to stick with me forever. This kid said, if you give your kid a tablet or an iPhone, you are giving them porn. Like, there is no not watching porn on those things. Like, they're for a kid who, even if they don't go out looking for it, stuff is gonna pop up, ads are gonna come up. Like, if you hand your kid a tablet, you are handing them porn. And I was like, damn, that is, first of all, so true. And second of all, so terrifying. Because, like, when your kid is getting older and you want to, like, make sure they're okay and make sure you can call them and, you know, track their location, which I would absolutely do, like, you're also putting porn in their pocket.
Yeah, but you know what? I feel like this is, on a cultural level, part of what ultimately is a larger movement towards, in certain ways, going back to analog, you know, not necessarily sucking your auntie's titty when it's just communal, but in that same vein, from our last, I don't know, I'll try to, for the real ones, our last episode.
Oh yeah, that's a callback.
Julia Hart. This is a callback to Julia Hart. I don't know. I want this to be like a whole, the whole thing's a series, you know?
Yeah. Or
if you listen, you get rewarded with not rabbit holes.
Callbacks.
Callbacks and Easter eggs. Not rabbit holes. Easter eggs. But anyway, I think it's like, get him a Motorola. Razors are coming back, because I don't want my kid to have a tablet.
I can't track my kids'
location. I bet you $1 million that the flip phone-esque things will come back, or like just like the Nokias or whatever, and that they will just be upgraded for parents. I bet you that becomes a thing by the time your kid needs a phone.
But why haven't they done that yet? It's been something that parents have been talking about for like 10 years now, that there is no option for a kid to have a smartphone that doesn't have access to porn. It does not exist. And it's kind of like, remember when iPhone first came out, the only reason why there's a lock screen is because law enforcement was saying, like, lawmakers and law enforcement were saying, this is a crime magnet. Everyone is stealing iPhones. People are getting mugged. Violence is happening because people are stealing this from each other. You, Apple, need to put a security measure in place so that these thefts are no longer as rewarding for the people that are stealing it. Like, you need to put this lock in. You need to do something so that only the owner can use this phone. That's why they have lock screens now. That's why phones have lock screens.
Sorry, I got distracted. I don't know if you can hear what's going on upstairs. My mother's like, you need to walk the dogs. But that's really interesting. That makes sense. I heard most of it, except that was the beginning. Right. Okay. That's why they have lock screens.
Yeah. So I don't know why.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, back to.
But I guess, the last thing though on that though, is like, it is interesting though, that now there's a second call to action of like, how can I give my kid and know where my kid is a phone without there being porn on? And everyone's like,
yeah, it's just like, too bad. Your kid is going to learn about sex from like people that are choking each other.
I mean, text your boy back. Let's get a startup going. Like, let's have phones for kids. Let's make a phone for kids company where you have all the features of mom. The fact that that doesn't exist is actually like insulting to me. And I'm not even a mother to be.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. And like, what's going to happen when like, when my daughter starts hooking up with and dating boys and they've all been watching porn since they were 8 years old. Already our generation, they were just learning about porn and they were already monsters. They were already monsters. Like,
but it is the younger guys. It is the younger guys who are more porny in bed because they didn't have any. That's literally what they're copying.
Yeah, they never had a normal, because the thing is kids are not having sex as much as they used to, which is great for teen pregnancy rates, but it's not great for interpersonal development, I don't think, because like they're never learning how to be normal.
Agreed.
Like, they're not.
You gotta fuck a few people to really know how to do it right.
Yeah, they're never having that moment of like being timid and literally not knowing how it works or like what is supposed to happen. They're just going straight into choking and mascara running. It's like,
well, you know what occurs to me? What we're really talking about? Connection and the richness of connection. Because I think even like with social media conversations, like, wow, we're all more connected than ever. Molly and I can have a podcast and she's in the UK and I'm here. And yet what we lose when everything is digital is the actual human moment to moment experiences that bond you to each other, or even just bond you to the human race or the human species. Do you know what I mean?
Like seeing people as humans.
Yes. What? And being with people as humans and like knowing that in bed, knowing when a woman is satisfied in bed or vice versa is actually something
that
you would.
When a bed is satisfied in a woman.
Right. Like there's yeah, yes. The reverse happens. But it's like, you don't know what you don't know. So until you have the experience of realizing that, like I was listening to someone was telling a joke the other day about how now that they like become a lesbian and like they got a woman off for the first time, they get it. It's so addicting because like the satisfaction of like actually doing it is so amazing. It's like, I think that there are men who don't even know that that's even a thing to aim for anymore. Like, because it's just, because you'd have to, it would be between two, you, it's a felt experience shared between two people IRL, and it's so different than just like acting out what you imagined or what made you horny when you were alone at home. It's like not the same. As you can't use somebody to get your idea of connection off. You have to actually connect, which is about improv, a play, finding out, discovering, not like recreating something that you saw.
Yeah. Okay, should we do the astrology on the Patreon?
I think we should.
Because say it with me now, Russell Brand is a Gemini, an obvious.
Oh, Gemini. Wait, hold on. Gemini.
What were you going to say?
I said rapist.
Yes. I mean, we talk a lot of smack about Geminis because I'm sorry. It's evidence based. They're not. Obviously,
I'm a Gemini rising. So it's okay. I'm Jewish and a Gemini rising. So whatever Molly says about Jewish people or Geminis, it's okay by me.
I would never say anything bad about Jewish people. Geminis. That's true.
How could you?
Yeah, I couldn't. A Gemini, another story. We've all lived through the Donald Trump presidency. We are all permitted some Gemini slander.
Sure.
From time to time. But oh, yeah. So, okay.
Kanye's Gemini. Well, here's what I'll say publicly real quickly about the astrology. And then, yes, we should.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating in terms of the timing of all this, the next lunation, the next big full moon that we have. So we just had the new moon in Virgo. The next big lunation is the full moon in Aries. And wouldn't you know, Russell Brand? Aries moon.
Wow. I cannot wait to find out what that means and why. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I also want to say something that I forgot to mention. He just looks rapey and he always has because of the hair. And it's a British thing, Sarah. Do you know who Jimmy Savile is?
Molly, I actually have Jimmy Savile's chart up.
Oh my God. I was literally.
I'm with you, baby. I'm with you, baby.
All right. Catch us on the Patreon, patreon.com/space trash podcast.
Yeah.
patreon.com/space trash podcast. We're going to find out why British male TV stars with bangs cannot be trusted. Nathan Fielding, I don't think it's libelous to say that he has got a molester haircut, and he's friends with Russell Brand. And someone posted something on Twitter about how he openly talked about dating a 16-year-old as well. So I think we should get into that. So, okay, patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast. Beware these British TV men with bangs.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles of the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash, but the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.